After today, I think everything will be getting better.
Thai voters cast ballots for the first time since a 2014 military coup. It's Monday, March 25th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You'll find us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, the Mueller report on possible Russian collusion with the Trump campaign is out. Much of India is choking. Muslim patrols seek peace. The happiest countries and free speech for students. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Thais voted Sunday in an election called a return to democratic rule, but which was widely criticized as an exercise designed by Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha to entrench his military stronghold on power. As Steve Sanford reports from Bangkok, initial results indicate the military-backed party is in the lead.
Thai voters turned out in record numbers amid tight security in the country's first election since the 2014 military coup that brought junta leader Prayut Chan-o-cha to power. The mood appeared jubilant at times as the long-awaited moment arrived.
I see a movement of youngsters coming in, hoping to make a change, but I think it'll be a while before we see that change, but it's a good start.
After today, I think everything will be getting better. The new election can make the economy getting better.
Election monitors from 11 countries observed polling stations amid reports of vote buying and other irregularities. But critics say that the day of truth will come on May 9, when official final results will be announced.
Everything will become clearer as to the junta and General Prayut will be successful in their bid to hold on to power using this election as their springboard, or the voices of Thai people who want to see change, who want to step out of repressive military rule towards democratic civilian rule, whether that dream will come true or not.
Meanwhile, supporters of the Pheu Party of ousted former Prime Minister Thaksin Shinawatra braced for a rough road ahead, as early results showed the army-linked Palong Pracharat Party in the lead. Thais will be waiting anxiously to see what real changes will come with the election results. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Bangkok, Thailand.
Counting began immediately after the polls closed at 5 p.m. local time. The campaign was marred by allegations of vote buying. However, complaints were few on polling day, with election observers from Australia, Canada, the United States, and 10 members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations on hand. Security was tight and opinions were mixed, as about 52 million Thais voted. With 92% of votes counted, the Palong Pracharat Party was first with 7.5 million votes, according to the country's election commission. Its vote total falls short of the numbers required for an outright majority in parliament. Pheu Thai, which was the governing party ousted by the coup, was next with 7 million votes. A new party, Future Forward, which was an anti-junta and became popular with young voters, scooped up nearly 5.2 million votes. Nearly 6% of the votes were disqualified, according to the Election Commission, which said it would provide an update on counting later Monday. The country likely faces several weeks of haggling among political parties before a potentially unstable coalition government is formed. Thais voted for a 500-member parliament, which, along with the 250-member junta-appointed Senate, will decide the next prime minister. Leaders of political parties opposed to military rule urged a high turnout as the only way to derail Prayut's plans, but at 66%, turnout fell short of their hopes. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia, as well as the voanews.com website, as our story continues to develop. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Thai military-backed party in lead in Thai elections. Chinese president visiting Monaco amid European tech worries. Vigils against racism held in New Zealand. Second cyclone bears down on West Australia. First subway opens in Indonesia's gridlocked capital. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and also when you stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Washington has been in deep suspense over the findings of the Russia probe now that special counsel Robert Mueller has concluded a two-year investigation of Moscow's meddling in the 2016 U.S. election and contacts between President Donald Trump's inner circle and Russia. VOA's Michael Bowman reports that a new battle is brewing as some details are now emerging over whether and how much of Mueller's report will be made public.
It was a probe that consumed a presidency.
Collusion. There was no collusion. It's a collusion hoax. It's a collusion witch hoax. I don't collude with Russia.
Now completed, the investigation led to 37 indictments and 5 guilty pleas by former Trump associates. The final report was given to Attorney General William Barr, who has authority over how much is shared with Congress and the American people. Democrats are speaking out.
It's imperative for Mr. Barr to make the full report public and provide its underlying documentation and findings to Congress.
Do not think you can bury this report. It is essential that the report be made completely public.
In wrapping up the probe, Special Counsel Robert Mueller issued no new indictments and none of the existing ones alleged criminal conspiracies to subvert the 2016 presidential election by anyone close to President Trump.
To date, not one bit of evidence to show any type of coordination, collusion, conspiracy between the Trump campaign and Russia to influence the election.
In a statement, Republican Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham urged as much transparency as possible, consistent with the law, in handling the Mueller report. Other Republicans say Democrats will never be satisfied.
They don't think this Mueller report's going to be the bombshell they all anticipated it was going to be. So now they're launching all kinds of other charges, all kinds of other investigations. This is how the Democrats are going to operate.
Democrats argue it is too soon to proclaim Trump's vindication.
Let's see what the report has to say. If they're so confident that the report is going to exonerate them, they should fight to make that report and the underlying evidence public and available to Congress.
Schiff added that while the Justice Department cannot indict a sitting president, Congress is obligated to hold Trump accountable.
This is the end of the beginning. It's a day we've all been waiting for, but in a way it's an incredibly anticlimactic day because it's entirely possible we really won't get information for months and months.
Russia has denied any attempt to interfere in American elections, an assertion U.S. lawmakers of both parties derisively reject. Michael Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
Happening now in Asia, Chinese President Xi Jinping has found one country in Europe not worried about China's growing global clout or its ambitions to dominate technology. Xi visited the tiny Mediterranean principality of Monaco Sunday as part of a European tour that is clouded by mixed feelings about how to engage with China. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy we're able to start a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. Year after year, India's capital city of New Delhi finds itself on the list of the world's most polluted cities. The perilously high level of pollution and the public outcry against it has led the government to take preventative measures. In 2018, the city saw a marginal increase in the number of days when the air quality index improved slightly from severe to poor or very poor category. The Indian government has also implemented a comprehensive action plan for curbing air pollution further. Experts believe it's a step in the right direction, but as we hear from Rital Joshi, the battle to clean Delhi's air will be a long and hard one.
New Delhi residents spend most days enveloped in a layer of smog, inhaling toxic air with every breath. Vehicle exhaust, construction sites, factories, brick kilns, and burning crops and rubbish are the main contributors to the city's dirty air. But it is the high level of unseen microscopic pollution that worries environmentalists the most. According to WHO, the safe limit for airborne particulate matter less than 2.5 microns in diameter is just 10 micrograms per cubic meter. India specifies 40 micrograms as safe. But in Delhi, the level sometimes rises to more than 400 micrograms.
Ek baal ka jo diameter hota hai, wo hai 50 microns.
The diameter of a human hair is 50 microns. Compare this to 2.5 microns. It's not even visible. These tiny particles are very toxic and enter our body directly through the air we breathe.
Delhi's topography is partly responsible for high levels of pollution in the city. It lies in the Indo-Gangetic Plain, an area that traps bad air and pollution.
It's a low-lying area bounded by in north by Himalaya and in south by the mountain ranges. So you have basically a place, low-lying area where you are emitting, and the meteorology or the wind is not actually allowing the pollutants to disperse very easily.
Last year, Delhi implemented the Graded Action Response Plan. It calls for various short-term emergency measures depending on the level of pollution in the air.
The Badarpur coal power plant is closed.
All the coal power plants, brick kilns, and industries running on biomass in Delhi were shut down.
These steps led to a slight improvement in the air quality index in 2018 as compared to the previous 2 years. Now the government is focusing on long-term measures, which include far-reaching permanent policy changes, especially for automotive fuels.
40% of the pollution in Delhi is vehicular. We are trying to introduce Euro 6 emission standards from 2020 and bring in liquefied natural gas for heavy vehicles. Within the capital region, we have listed what fuels may be used.
Experts believe, apart from the government action, people's support for switching to public transport and adopting an eco-friendly lifestyle could help clear Delhi's air. Ritul Joshi, VOA News, New Delhi, India.
Coming up, keeping the peace amid hate. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news from VOA Asia. Australia is getting slammed by a second powerful cyclone in 2 days as Cyclone Veronica bore down on the country's northwest coast Sunday. Cyclone Trevor hit a remote part of the Northern Territory Saturday. Hundreds were evacuated ahead of the storms as a precaution. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a week has passed since a white supremacist gunned down 50 Muslims during Friday prayers in Christchurch, New Zealand. Some 15,000 kilometers away, a recently formed group in New York, Muslim Community Patrol and Services, has found itself on the front lines as it counsels distraught neighbors. Soon its presence will be widely felt and seen throughout the city, as VOA's Ramon Taylor reports.
We'll keep our windows down. We'll observe everything. We'll listen for sounds.
Nazrul Islam is an imam and a Quranic school principal. Soon, he'll also be patrolling New York City streets, unarmed, in a Ford Taurus inscribed with the words, Assalamu alaikum, peace be upon you.
Say if someone just, an immigrant came to this country from, you know, Arabic-speaking country and they might be in trouble or they need help, and they see Assalamu alaikum. They probably don't know how to read English, but they see Assalamu alaikum in Arabic. They'll definitely know this is, there are Muslim people in that car. So they can come and they can, you know, ask us if they need anything.
Last week's deadly attack in New Zealand is the latest in a wave of hate crimes against Muslims and migrants worldwide. The newly formed Muslim Community Patrol and Services, while intended to provide mentorship and local crime prevention, has also been a source of support for residents dealing with personal crises. More than 50 volunteers strong, they are equipped to bridge multiple language gaps. They are also trained in basic security, in CPR, and as chaplains and mental health counselors. The group is not unique. Brooklyn also has an Asian civilian patrol.
I always thought, like, why don't Muslims have that? Everyone should have this. Like, this is amazing, right? It's a common ground between cultures.
Volunteers with the Brooklyn Asian Civilian Observation Patrol also ride in patrol vehicles resembling the police. The language barrier, along with a spike in crimes, led to the formation of the patrol.
Realistically, it's impossible to eliminate racism. So there has to be an organization speaking on our behalf.
Group founder Louis Liu immigrated from China in the 1990s.
Since we started our organization about 5 years ago, we've seen a lot of improvement between the police and the local community, particularly crime victims. We enable immigrants to express themselves without any fear or concern, and the law enforcement has confidence in the role that we're playing.
Mawish Fatma, who grew up in Brooklyn, hopes her community will view its volunteers as older brothers and sisters.
Every community really needs their own kind of community patrol.
The Muslim Community Patrol says it plans to expand operations to all of New York City. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
This news from VOA Asia. Indonesia's long-awaited first subway opened Sunday in the country's capital with the aim of relieving crippling traffic gridlock in the Southeast Asia's biggest economy. The second phase is an 8-kilometer northward line planned for completion by 2014, the two projects costing $2.6 billion. You'll find more on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now in VOA Asia, are you happy where you live? It's possible it may be linked to the categories that make up the latest survey of happiest countries. For the second consecutive year, Finland ranked as the world's happiest country in a United Nations report. The other Nordic countries, as well as the Netherlands, Switzerland, Canada, New Zealand, and Austria, also made the top 10 in the happiness survey of 156 nations. South Sudan sank to the bottom, and other war-torn countries also ranked low. VOA's Slotika Hoke has more.
Finland is known for long, cold winters, its beautiful forests, and its extensive welfare system. Its economy is comparable to other European economies. So what makes the Finns such a happy nation? They themselves are not quite sure.
Our economy is doing fine, and I don't know, maybe we're really close to the nature.
It certainly is not the weather.
It can't be because of the climate. We've had such a long and dark winter, but maybe it's the level of security.
It's safe here. You don't have to be scared all the time, and you can trust people.
The happiness in Finland is boosted by access to nature, safety, affordable childcare, free education, and heavily subsidized healthcare. The other top 10 countries ranked high for similar reasons. It is understandable why conflict-ridden countries such as South Sudan, the Central African Republic, and Afghanistan would rank low. But the United States, the world's most powerful country and number one economy, continued to slide, dropping to 19th place this year. The report attributes the U.S. decline to depression, caused mainly by addictions, ranging from substance abuse to gambling and digital media. The countries that have seen the biggest gains in the past decade are in Central and Eastern Europe, Sub-Saharan Africa, and several in Latin America. Yemen, India, Syria, Botswana, and Venezuela have experienced the largest declines. The report looked into factors that could affect the happiness of a nation, including economic output, social support, governance, healthy life expectancy, absence of corruption, and generosity. It found that people tend to feel happier if they help others, but if they do so by choice. The increased time spent on social media is linked to a decline in happiness, especially among adolescents. Happy people are more likely to vote for the incumbent. Recent gains of populist politicians could be the result of their ability to appeal to unhappy voters. The report stresses that there are many variables that can affect a nation's happiness, and no simple explanations are applicable to all.
You just need to remind yourself when you feel about complaining about the weather that we're really happy here. We're on our way to afternoon tea.
One thing seems invariable. Sunny weather does not guarantee happiness. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Students seem happiest when they're able to speak out about issues as they begin to engage deeper with the world around them. Here in the United States, President Trump is signing an executive order requiring U.S. colleges to reaffirm protection of free speech or risk losing federal funding. The order is a sign of support to conservatives who say their voices have been stifled on liberal campuses, but civil liberty activists are concerned the move is politically motivated and see it as contradictory to Trump's own attacks on freedom of speech. White House correspondent Patty Whitaker-Suara has this report.
After violent protests erupted at the University of California, Berkeley in late 2017, forcing the school to cancel a far-right figure speaking event, President Donald Trump threatened to withdraw federal funding. After a conservative activist was punched in the face while recruiting on the Berkeley campus, Trump embraced him at the Conservative Political Action Conference stage earlier this month. At that time, Trump promised an executive order requiring campuses to support free speech or face penalties. He signed the order today.
If a college or university doesn't allow you to speak, we will not give them money. It's very simple.
The order is seen as a nod to conservatives who say their voices are muted on liberal campuses, with some schools blocking speakers because of student protests. Many of them were invited to the signing, including a pro-life activist who says she was harassed by school officials.
I have seen lives saved through my Students for Life efforts on campus. But I never imagined the hostility I would face when trying to express my beliefs.
The order is largely symbolic. Colleges already have to agree to protect free speech in order to get federal research funding. Civil liberty activists are concerned the move is a political effort to shore up support from the president's conservative base. It's also seen contradictory to Trump's attacks on freedom of speech, including labeling unfavorable press coverage as fake news and blasting football players who kneel during the national anthem to protest racial inequality.
There's a hypocrisy there. And again, I don't think it's necessarily unique to the president, but I do think that actually coming out in favor of this executive order because of his belief in free speech seems a little disingenuous given all the statements that he's made in the past.
The order does not specify how or by what standard federal agencies will ensure compliance.
There is a danger that when it's implemented, it may the political aspect of it may be present there with the kinds of cases that are actually brought in front of whatever committee is put together to enforce this.
But it sends a clear message that Trump is eager to embrace the priorities of conservatives who say their freedom of speech is under attack. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Ladies and gentlemen, please remain seated as the
VOA's Rick Pantaleo joins us to take a moment and tell us what we've learned about an asteroid.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists with NASA's OSIRIS-REx mission to the asteroid Bennu have written a number of papers in the journal Nature that outline discoveries made since it began orbiting it on December 31, 2018. Among the findings is that particle plumes were found erupting from the surface of Bennu. While many of the plume particles completely cleared the asteroid, the scientists also report some of the ejected particles orbited Bennu and then fell back to its surface. The studies also reveal that Bennu's surface is much rougher and denser with boulders than expected. This finding is causing the mission team to change its flight and sample collection plans and locate a site that is free from such hazards. In 2020, the OSIRIS-REx will get close to the asteroid's surface, lower a collection instrument, and then gather some material that will get back to Earth in 2023. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. Find us on the radio throughout Asia, like U Radio of Hatyai University, FM 101.25 at Hatyai University in Thailand. Thanks to everyone there who's tuned in today. We also send our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're all in Washington. We hope you have a nice day ahead.